Patricia Camilleri, Director of the Communications and Alumni Relations Office here at the University of Malta. In this series called Research Matters, I shall be discussing the many research projects undertaken by the university's academics from all fields of study. I'm very happy to have with me here today on Research Matters two professors from the Faculty of Engineering, and specifically from the Department of Systems and Control Engineering. There's Professor Kenneth Camilleri and Professor Simon Farbury. Perhaps I'd say a few words about each of them, so we can sort of put them into a little bit of a context here. Professor Camilleri has been a member of the Faculty of Engineering for the past 18 years, and together with Professor Farbury has recently co-founded the Department of Systems and Control Engineering, where he contributes by teaching and research in the areas of signal and image processing, computer vision, computational intelligence. Professor Camilleri has also established a strong research group in biomedical engineering and is currently setting up a biomedical engineering research laboratory within the department, about which hopefully we'll say a few words. The research interests of Professor Camilleri have led him to work on the analysis and segmentation of textured regions in images, the development of computer algorithms that could interpret hand-drawn sketches and scribbles, the development of computer vision algorithms for scene understanding, and the analysis of brain signals for the diagnosis of brain diseases and for brain-computer interfacing. Professor Simon Farbury received his electrical engineering degrees from the University of Malta in 1989 and MSc and PhDs in control systems engineering from the University of Sheffield in 1995 and 2000 respectively. From 1989 to 1991, he was employed as a test and product engineer with SGS Thomson Microelectronics Limited. In 1992, he joined the Faculty of Engineering at this university as an academic staff member. He's currently head of the Department of Systems and Control Engineering, which he co-founded, as we said, with Professor Camilleri in 2007. Dr. Farbury's research and teaching interests include adaptive and intelligent control, neural networks, nonlinear control, stochastic control, mobile robot control, and biomedical engineering. He has published, obviously, numerous articles in journals and international conference proceedings, is a member of the editorial board of the International Journal of Systems Science, and a senior member of the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers. He's also co-author of a book entitled Functional Adaptive Control, an Intelligent Systems Approach, published by Springer in 2001. Welcome to you both, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Clearly, the Faculty of Engineering has developed enormously these last 20 years, really. I can even remember when I first started working at the university back in the early 90s, it was a small faculty with workshops, really, down there opposite the library, and the big building hadn't, the engineering faculty building hadn't been built yet. That was, I think, opened in about 92. And it's gone through various stages since then, of course, and lately, as we mentioned before, there has been a new approach to the departments. Before, it was very much electrical, mechanical, and now the departments that there are, I think there are six, if I remember rightly, correct me, please, if I'm wrong, including your own department, the Systems and Control Engineering. Professor Camilleri, perhaps you could tell us a little bit about the metamorphosis, really, of this of the faculty and the development of your department.
Yes, the department was founded in 2007 after the university restructured the faculties, creating also the Faculty of ICT at the time. And at that moment in time, the Faculty of Engineering restructured its intellectual resources such that those that had were concerned with computational techniques, control, automation, signals and systems were organized under the auspices of the Department of Systems and Control Engineering. One of the aspects that dominates this department is the concept of systems thinking. That is, we try and harness the intellectual skills necessary to analyze systems, whatever their nature. So if you look at our teaching and research portfolio, we'll see a wide range of topics ranging from control of mechanical systems right through the analysis of signals taken from the brain of a human being, and right through weather forecasting, for example. Because at the end of the day, these are all systems that can be modeled mathematically with the techniques that we are experts in within our department. Perhaps Simon can also elaborate much further as well.
Well, I think that, in fact, Professor Fabri, so you're one of these young lecturers who've gone abroad, done their PhDs, come back with the latest knowledge. And in fact, this is a bit of a hallmark of the Faculty of Engineering, where there are, you're a professor, you're still pretty young. It's a very dynamic, very young faculty, really. And I think that contributes to this rather sort of a buzz that there is in the faculty.
As you correctly stated, the Faculty of Engineering has evolved quite rapidly during the last few years. And it's still evolving. I mean, I'm sure that there are most of the academic staff members within the faculty in the different departments have got this sort of energy to grow even further and to push the research and teaching within the faculty, up to very high standards and compete with European and also international partners. There is also a strong collaboration with foreign institutions as well, which is a very positive thing as well. Yes, as Kenneth mentioned earlier on, our department is one of the newer departments within the faculty in systems and control engineering, and the areas that the department deals with, which are captured more or less in the name systems and control engineering, I would say that we sort of specialize in the analysis, design, and development, if you like, of complex engineering systems. So where there is complexity in an engineering system, which typically in today's systems means that you have a combination of hardware interfaces, which can be electronic components, mechanical components, computers, digital systems, and so on. You need to ensure that these processes, these mechanisms, operate as automatically and as autonomously as possible to serve a useful purpose. So this very often involves the capturing of information from the system by means of suitable sensors, and then you need to process that information to make sense out of it. I mean, not manually, but the machine, in effect, it's a computer which does that for you, or an electronic circuit. And then out of that information, you force the system to make something useful. But having said that, as Kenneth mentioned earlier on, because we take a systems approach to all of this, it's not applicable only to engineering systems made of hardware components and so on. The same techniques, the same mathematics, if you like, the same modeling skills could be applied to, if we consider even, for example, the economic system to be a system. So it's like a black box, if you like, which has got certain inputs, and as a consequence of those inputs and maybe disturbances, generates an output. Now, how does the output depend on those inputs and the other disturbances? That requires modeling skills, which are similar in terms of structure and in terms of the science behind them, to irrespective of whether you're modeling a societal system, an economic system, or a pure hardware engineering system, if you like. And that's the nice thing about our department. And that's why the emphasis is on the word systems engineering. So basically, if you take a systems point of view, perhaps you don't worry too much in the detail of what's inside the system, but more on how the system reacts to what goes into it and what tries to disturb it.
Well, that's a very interesting concept, the idea that, okay, you're engineers, but what you're doing concerns areas that go beyond what would be strictly considered engineering. I was looking at your department's activities. I obviously was looking through the documents before this interview, and I must say this came across quite clearly, that there were many, many different areas of interest, quite diverse,
they appear diverse on a first view, but as we have been discussing, the underlying principles are the same. Let me take one sector of our activity with which I am mainly concerned. This is signal and image processing and the development of techniques applied to signals and images. So, if we talk about signals, for example. You can see a number of research projects concerned with signals in our curriculum, in a sense. Some of them concern, for example, signals taken from biomedical systems, biological signals, for example. Whereas others concern signals taken from a camera, which are two-dimensional images. Taken for the purpose of, for example, recognizing people or recognizing three-dimensional shapes of the scene or of the objects. Now, all of these may look as if they are different areas. Actually, the underlying principles are fundamentally the same. By using signal analysis theory, signal processing theory, with, of course, certain fine-tuning applied to the particular application, but the underlying theory is fundamentally the same, and the underlying engineering principles and constraints in effect, not just the mathematics, but also the engineering aspects of the problem, are very similar in effect. So prima facie, yes, you would say it's so diverse. In fact, we have this problem when we try and popularize what we do in our department. Some people ask us, what do we do? What do you do? Well, we do so many things, but actually the our capability to do so many things emerges from the fact that we are applying this fundamental theory to so many areas that are economically different, one could say, but fundamentally scientifically very similar. This is not to say that once you solve one problem in a certain area, you've solved all the problems, or similar problems in different areas, because if we take, for example, the application of signal analysis, for example, to economic modeling, for example, or forecasting in economic systems, there are certain problems there that emerge from the nature of economics that are different from those that emerge from, for example, the diagnosis of brain diseases that can be done through the analysis of the brain signal from the scalp of the human head. But that is simply a problem that is different from the underlying nature of the problem itself. The principles that we apply to solve the problem are then very much similar, and we find that we can actually transfer knowledge which we have developed in a certain area to a different area with relative ease. Of course, it requires further research, further fine-tuning to bring that theory compatible with the nature of the problem at hand and their investigation, of course.
One of the areas which I find fascinating, and you're both interested in this, is the biomedical area, which we have briefly spoken about on previous occasions. What have you been doing in that area lately?
Well, as you have mentioned during our biographical review, at the moment, the department is heavily concerned with upgrading and setting up new labs. In fact, I am at the moment working on setting up a biomedical engineering laboratory, and Simon as well is setting up and upgrading the control engineering laboratory, which you can speak about as well further on. Now, these two labs are also examples of our of the interrelationship between these areas. For example, if you talk about the biomedical engineering lab, we are looking at equipment that concerns acquisition of signals and data from the human body for various purposes, as well as the modeling of the human body, which is an aspect which is in the expertise area of Simon, actually. And similarly, in the control lab, we are looking at automatic ways of doing things with visual systems, for example, using cameras and such sensors, for example. So there we can see a synergy between the aspects of system modeling, system control for automation, acquisition of signals from biomedical systems, and the synergy between all these three. To take a specific example of a project we're working on together at the moment, this is the analysis of brain signals taken from the scalp of the human head for the purposes of recognizing the mental state of the person. The application that is typically used here is brain-computer interfacing, that is to interface a person with a computer through his brain without any muscular or end effector use. So the person can just think of a task and have this translated on the machine either directly or coded to get some of the task. For example, you might want to move the cursor up or down or left or right, and you can think about moving the cursor left or right. Or you can also think about flowers, and the cursor can also move left or right. I mean, so it doesn't have to have a one-to-one correspondence. So the problem from a signal analysis point of view and from a modeling point of view is the same. How do we recognize the mental state of the brain so that then we can do something with that? We can control a machine with this. And again, here we are looking at the theory that is required, built upon signal analysis, because we need to analyze the signal, we need to extract information, so we extract features that are characteristic of the specific mental state. We need to recognize those features so that we can associate with the mental state. This is the area of pattern recognition or computational intelligence, depending what techniques we use, or sometimes even literally modeling the signal with an abstract model, which is extensively used in other aspects, for example, of automation, one can mention. So we see that we are using these techniques from all over the place, one could say, to achieve one goal, which is recognize the specific mental state of the human's brain at a moment in time as effectively and as accurately as possible.
And I presume that when you have various researchers looking at these various aspects so that everything then comes together, as you say, each will have his own area of expertise. Is that the case, Professor Fabri?
I mean, once, like we explained before, once you have an accurate model of the system, so you can tell and you can predict how the system will react if it's given certain inputs, what signals will come out of it if you apply certain signals into it. And then the next logical step would be, okay, so how shall I use, in effect, what I said is, through a model, you know the behavior of the system, how you expect it to behave. So if you know that, can we control the system now? Can we make it behave in a certain manner, in a certain way? So once you capture those signals, they might require some signal processing, as we explained before, in order to extract useful information. But now, how shall we use that information? And this links with the control aspect. It's the second term in the title of our department, systems and control. So get that information now and use it to make the system behave in the way you want it to behave. So to continue with the example which Kenneth was bringing earlier on brain-computer interfacing, extending it a little bit further, for instead of just using the signals from the brain to move a cursor on the screen, you might have a robotic arm connected to your computer, a physical mechanical arm connected to your computer, and by having the human having thoughts about how he would like or she would like to move the robotic arm, you actually affect that movement. So in this case now we have also control. So the signals which are coming out of the human's brain are being processed, useful information is extracted out of them. That information is telling us that the human being wants the robotic arm to behave in a certain manner. The control aspect would be then to make sure that the robotic arm behaves in that manner and does not go out of control and do crazy things.
You mentioned robots, yeah. Robotics, and very much sort of a physical end product to what has been created through looking at the theory and then looking at the practice and doing the experiments. And these end products are going to be like applications, I presume, to
right.
the work that you're doing. And what kind of applications?
There are several applications you can think of. In fact, if you think about it, what we have been talking about is trying to create systems and machines which are almost intelligent. If you like, they behave very similar as far as can possibly be achieved to what one would expect a normal biological system to behave. It doesn't have to be a human being, but I mean, a dog, a cat has got its own intelligence. I mean, it's autonomous, it can behave in a certain way, it can survive and so on. The ultimate aim, we are still far from it. The ultimate aim in general, not just our department, researchers worldwide working in this area, is to try and make machines as intelligent and as autonomous as possible. So, typical applications which you can find. Robotics is one case in point. For example, mobile robots. Space probes which are sent to Mars to explore the surface. It's on its own over there, so it needs autonomy. So as, for example, to avoid certain obstacles. So as to capture information and determine which information is useful or not to the experts down there on Earth who would want to have a look at that information. But there are also much more down-to-earth applications. Let's go to something which might sound almost trivial with respect to this previous example, but which is as important. Temperature control in a room. Again, the same principles, perhaps to a lesser complexity, but the same principles are employed. You are measuring a signal, in this case it would be temperature. In some cases you measure something else, perhaps the exterior temperature in countries where it's very cold, humidity levels and so on. And the ultimate aim is to make sense out of the information being provided by the sensors who are doing these measurements, and then making sure that your air conditioning system is working in such a way as to control the temperature in your room the way you want it to. The same principles, the same theory is what governs all these different applications, with different levels of complexity, of course. In automobiles, for example, today there are engine management systems which try to optimize the mix of fuel with air so as to ensure that the engine works efficiently and you get less emissions. And hence, it helps also towards preserving the environment and so on. Automated navigations, we are aware of the term autopilot in an aircraft, where effectively, especially during long-haul flights, or also on ships where it's traveling, the pilot or the captain of the ship sets the course, and it's the automatic control system which takes care to ensure that the ship, respective of the wind or the waves or whatever, is moving along that course, along the direction. So that helps the pilot of the aircraft or the captain of the ship to navigate more accurately and perhaps also give attention to some other things and not solely to the navigating of the...
Well, certainly those examples give a very good idea of the breadth of application. Professor Kamley, before you were talking about setting up the laboratory, it's easy to say, but not so easy to do, in the sense that you need the funding, you need the people, you need the contacts abroad. How difficult has it been?
Yes, the first step, which I should also mention, is the funding, actually, which is... This laboratory is funded by the structured funds, 2007-2013 structured funds, concerned with the capital expenditure, not human resource, but capital expenditure. So we have been granted €500,000 in this case to build this laboratory and purchase capital equipment, basically, not human resources, not people. But of course, and the process itself of identifying the equipment, writing down the specifications, tendering the procurement, that in itself is a very very lengthy process. We've been going through this process for the past 2.5 years or so, I suppose, and we're not there yet, so it's we've still got a few months to go, but we're getting there. And once we complete this, and hopefully the lab will be up and running in the sense that we get the equipment in place and functional, the next question then is actual people, because that, it I think, is the next problem that we really have to face. Thanks to these structural funds, we have made a good investment in upgrading our facilities. We are now in a position to speak with our colleagues abroad, about our capabilities in terms of equipment and in terms of our expertise as well, because we have been publishing in the international literature for the past several years. So people do know us, and now we can go and also offer the possibility of having projects, collaborative projects with our equipment. But then again, the next question is, how many projects can you take? You need people. You need people who can delve into these problems, because each of these problems that I have mentioned and Simon has mentioned before as well, can be easily talked about in a few minutes, but actually behind them you've got people working several hours. We've just received on the 24th of December news about a publication, which a journal publication which has gone through, and we all sighed a great sigh of relief. Myself, Simon, and our colleagues in the department who were working on this paper, because it's a paper we had submitted in April originally. Of course, the work predated that time, but after that we had to do much more work, long hours, till late at night, to be able to formalize certain theory as the reviewers had requested from us, until it came up to a position where it was acceptable for publication in a very prestigious journal. This is the kind of work we're doing. So we are doing a lot of work behind closed doors in the wee hours of the morning, literally sometimes, right? So sometimes you see our emails, timestamped at 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, very often actually, because kind of you kind of get into a game with a problem. Usually when you have a problem you can't really solve at one go, you keep at it and can also forego your sleep, forego your weekends,
worrying the bone until
you can get this problem solved. Yeah. And thankfully with our combined various skills, very often we manage to solve these problems, which are sometimes very hard problems to solve. But this is how knowledge is created, and this is the hidden arm, hidden magic of research. The term research is a buzzword, everybody uses it, but I would humbly say that few people really know what goes behind it. It's like building a house. You can say, I'm going to build a house, but to build a house you've got to get your hands dirty, you've got to carry the stones on your shoulder. And it takes time, it takes money, it takes effort, and it takes sweat as well, and sometimes even pain. The outcome of this, however, is a miracle, and I would say is a miracle. The thing that Simon has been mentioning about having a room which is temperature controlled to your satisfaction is something we take for granted, mm-hmm. But isn't that a miracle? Having the ability to have a person drive a wheelchair with his thought because he's, for example, paraplegic, isn't it a miracle? Having the ability of a designer to sketch or scribble an idea and that being captured automatically by a computer and interpreted by a computer to rapidly create the final product, or at least a prototype of it, so that we come to market early and win a contract and have people employed, isn't it a miracle as well? So I think this is the cutting edge of research. And when you think about research, although it may seem like a buzzword, something we should do for perhaps for fun, of course you do it for fun as well. I mean, otherwise you won't be doing this. But there is a lot of work, effort and pain behind this. And the outcome, when successful, is our miracles. That will drive the economy, that will keep people healthy, that will drive society in general.
Well, thank you both very, very much for being with us today on Research Matters. We hope that the listeners have enjoyed what you've had to say to us today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I do hope you can join us again next week for another edition of Research Matters. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.